Training in order causes growth to cease. This is Dr. Herbert Albarelli, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with At the Absolute Philosopher. Training in order causes growth to cease. Our schools, our educational programs, including the University of Healing to a degree, cause growth to cease. The orderly program that we have in developing how one to go about learning oftentimes is the very thing that stops growth, that stops learning, that stops genius from expressing itself. We find, as Harry Truman once said, the world is run by C students, by students who just ache their way through school. They got maybe an average grade. They were not special students as far as the scholastic arrangement went, but they were just students. They got through. Maybe they didn't even get through. Einstein is one of those, and Edison was one of those. These are all great names of people who struggled their way through. And the reason they struggled their way through was that the school did not entice and intrigue them to use their highest and their best. The school taught them to do what they're taught to do, reading, writing, and arithmetic. While it's very true that these are very important aspects of our learning experience, and to get along in the world in which we are, they are very valuable. The inspirational tools which inspire a genius to be a genius, to shine forth the magic that is within them, is not the standard growth tools. The standard growth tools, with reading, writing, and arithmetic, as beautiful as they are, and as necessary as they are for the function of the world, they don't cause a dreamer to dream. They don't cause someone with imagination to soar. Because someone with imagination wants to move beyond the track that they're in. They want to move beyond the level of consciousness that they're doing. Today, we have so many examples of people doing these things. Well, years ago, too, the Empire State Building was supposed to be one of the highest in the world, and it was, for 4 years or better. Or was it 4 decades? But it was the highest and very, very fantastic. Now, who built it? What consciousness built it? And who inspired it to be built? And who encouraged the money to be spent to build it? And today in Kiwat, they're building one even taller, over 3,000 feet tall. Amazing. Now, why? Why would anyone want to build something that way? It's absolutely unnecessary. The building will do great. People will certainly put their offices in there, and people will be attracted to be in that building. It'll certainly be, when it's finished, the most beautiful modern building that one can have. But at its height, the winds are 150 miles an hour, and they would cause the building to whip back and forth like a tree in a breeze. And that's not what they want to do. So, what does some silly designer do? He designs the building so it doesn't do that, so it flows with it. So the wind moves through the building, around the building, but doesn't make the building wiggle and waggle. And if it does flow and bend and move, it's designed to do that. The structural steel is designed to take care of that. Well, now, why bother? Really, why bother? And when you can have enough flat land, and certainly where they're building the building in Kuwait, there's lots of land available. And they could just have a flat building, like the Pentagon, you know, stretched out over many, many acres. But no, they wanted to build this masterpiece. Some people might say monster, but this masterpiece. Because truly, what this building is doing, it is requiring the utmost of the genius of the engineers to design it and to understand it. It's just like the Gotthard tunnels being put underneath the mountains in Switzerland from Milan to Zurich. It'll be a fantastic thing when it's finished. But what they've done, they've gone from Milan at basically sea level to Zurich, which is not sea level, but it's at A level. And they have the flat tunnel running between these two places, these two nations, that will take people and that will take cartage, that will take things to these various places faster, smoother, easier than ever before. Well, now, that's a nice idea. It'd be a nice idea to stick a tube through there and then run these trains in the tube. But they can't just do that. They have to drill a hole. And in drilling a hole, they have found that they can drill a hole through this mountain. But this mountain is made up of many, many substances. And there is places where the mountain would want to settle into an area. If you make it the hole, then the mountain wants to settle down 30 inches, it said, over a period of time, and they have to allow for that, and they have to plan for that, so that it doesn't settle down into the tunnel that they need to have to run their transportation equipment. Well, how do they know this? How do they figure this out? Well, the engineers are in there doing all sorts of calculations and all sorts of creations and all sorts of compression tests. And if anyone were to say something like that years ago, they'd say, what a fantasy, what a strange way to look at anything. But these engineers are of a new breed. They're of a breed of, hey, why not? Why not? I'd like to give it a try. And so they're giving it a try. They're doing beautiful things. Well, now, it won't be long, and the tunnel will be ready. All the way, 95 miles altogether. The actual tunnel is some 35 miles, but 95 miles altogether. Fantastic. Now, how do they do this? How do they create such a monstrosity, you might say, but yet, as people use it, they'll find it the most ordinary thing in the world. Just like the tunnel between England and France. It runs under the North Sea there, and as it runs under the ocean, 26 miles, wow, that's quite a distance too. And with the tides changing, and with the surface of the ocean, and the ground of the ocean, the floor of the ocean, shifting from time to time. How do they handle that? How do they handle a tunnel that goes through such a diverse activity as that? Well, they've figured out most, if not all, of the problems, and they have made solutions for them. Now, will they have problems that they have never thought of? Quite likely. And when they do, they'll figure out how to handle that. No matter what. Now, who's going to be doing these figuring out? Who's going to be doing these wonderful, creative, imaginative things? Training an order in a basic order causes growth to cease. Well, these engineers, they are not training in order. They are training in the school of chaos, you might say, where they take the maximum confusion and put balance to it. They take the maximum distortion and distraction that could take place in a given tunnel or in a given activity, of the wind blowing the top of the building, and they plan it so that it can be stable, so it can be trustworthy, so it can be beneficial, so it can be useful. But it takes that disorderly thinking, this thinking into the craziness of what the winds can do, of how the pressure of the mountain pushing down upon the sands and down upon the substance at the base of the mountain would affect a tunnel going through it. This takes imagination. This takes dreaming. This takes using your mind in a way that you never dreamed possible. I know my own son, as he was going through school, his mother and I were very academically oriented. We had done quite a bit of schooling ourselves, and we expected our son to go on to college and go on to great achievements in school, but he didn't choose to do that. While he was in school, he was supposed to be reading his textbooks and doing his reading, writing, and arithmetic. And what did he do? He was studying books on aeronautics. He was studying books on airplanes. And we didn't have the wisdom to understand that right then and there, we should have had him go to some vocational type school or some specialized school where he could train in aeronautic engineering. But we didn't do it. And he provided it for himself. And then when he got out of school, and he had graduated from a college preparatory high school, but when he got out of school, he really had no interest in going further in an academic career. And he had the opportunity to go down to Florida to study at the college there of engineering, of aircraft engineering, and he didn't want to. He wanted rather to have a set of books that he would have had at the college without all of the other things that they require you to have, and use that as a basis for his own understanding. Now, it's true he has not become a great literary giant, but his mind is fantastic. When you talk to him, he sounds like a university professor. He has all of the jargon, all of the language, all of the understanding, and he has the brilliance. But he has so many other things that are beside that. He has the unleashed genius within him. He takes ideas that other people think are impossible, and he brings them into fruition. As he was in high school, he would like to go hang gliding, and he built them out of garbage bags. And he put them over the wings of his hang glider, and he would fly over their areas. It was amazing. And his mother and I knew little about it, and so we didn't worry about him. But he did these things with his friends, and they did amazing things. And he continued to go on designing aircraft, designing ultralights. And he built many ultralights, and he sold them all over the world. He sells them even now all over the world. And people sometimes steal his design, and I'll say to him, "Hey, how come they stole your design? What do you think of that?" He said, "Well, they have that design, but I'm always improving my design, so they don't have my latest improvements. And whoever buys that older model plane, they won't have the latest improvements I have on the new ones." And how brilliant that is, how much of a genius that is, how unlimited he is. I would compare him to Einstein, I would compare him to Edison, I would compare him to the great inventors and the great thinkers of all time, because he is an unlimited consciousness, an unlimited mind, and he continues to be that way. How many of us are privileged to be so close to such a genius as that? How many of us are privileged to be the parents of Einstein and Edison and of my son Mark? Not very many, but the minds that they have are the minds that we all have. But they chose to unleash their mind. And Mark built and designed an engine, small engine, that would run his ultralight airplanes, that is pollution free. And he finished doing it, and he finished making it into what he wanted it to do. And then, before he had even gone much further, after he patented it and so forth, he says, "Hey, we're going to make an electric engine." Well, that's very suitable with the things they are today. But he came out with the idea long before these people started coming out with a need for it, for our ecology and our economy. And he has an electric engine that he's designed. And what does he do? He associates himself with a former NASA engineer who is retired and who works with him at his aircraft factory at Earthstar up in Santa Margarita. He does beautiful things. It's simple, not a great manufacturing plant, not a great industrial center, but it's a center of magic. And at the same time, he takes people into his world because of the largeness of his heart. And he has them working for him. And they have problems. And he becomes their counselor. And in counseling them with their problems, he helps them through drug addiction. He helps them through liquor addiction, alcoholic addiction. He helps them through all sorts of other things. He helps them with their families. He helps them with their lives. And all of them are devotees of Mark, because he is just a super revealed genius. We have a lot of super revealed geniuses around us, and they're the ones that would not fit into the mold that we tried to put them into. But they fit into a feeling, they fit into an attitude, they fit into a life that was far grander than anything we could have imagined for them. And as they're putting the tunnel through the St. Gotthard, through the Alps, what are they doing? Every day they're coming up with new surprises, and they're meeting them beautifully. As they build the tower in Kiwat, this magnificent building which will be the tallest in the world, they're coming up with problems even before they come up with them, because they know what the winds aloft are. Just 3,000 some feet, you know. Fantastic. Can you imagine what that would be? Can you imagine all the possibilities of the things that would be facing them that they couldn't have expected? No, you can't. And the reason you can't is because no one's been there before. This is a brand new territory. It's a brand new life. And you and I, we have within each of us the unrevealed genius. People like Edison and Einstein and Mark, they let that genius out. And in letting that genius out, magic takes place. And their lives are utterly fantastic. What sort of experience are you going to have? What sort of life are you going to have? Are you going to be the revealed genius? Or are you going to be whoever you are at the moment? Well, let go. And remember that Walt Disney started with a mouse. And he built a great entertainment industry. And you and I can start with who we are. And we can open our inner reservoir of genius and magic and reveal to ourselves and to the world the magic and the wonder that we are. Yes, it is a great and a fantastic world. Training in order causes growth to cease. And so the orderly training, though beneficial for the majority of humanity's cooperative living together in a society, the magic of the mind, the soul, the being, only begins to express. let yourself go and enjoy. Have a wonderful day and know that I love you. I love you. I love you.